Where are you at now with Ebola victims in
Liberia?
Well,
we're at zero, and hopefully in 5 or 6 days, we're supposed to be counting down to Liberia being Ebola-free by the World Health Organization. And I think the success is not government, is not flying in the U.S. military, is community, engage communities.
Well, we're going to leave it at that. 5 seconds for each of you to wrap up this with you women of wisdom in this time of war. Mairead McGuire.
Well, you know, America is a great country, and Eleanor Roosevelt was one of the contributors to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and you have a wonderful constitution. But revive your constitution, rededicate yourselves to international law,
Jody,
and be a peacemaker, not a war.
Jody Williams, you have 2 seconds.
Nothing about us without us. Women need to be involved in all aspects of peace and security.
Lame Bowie.
Do one good thing every day that everyone else is scared to do.
We will leave it at that. Lema Bowie and Mairead McGuire and Jody Williams, thanks so much. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Mike Burke, John Hamilton. I'm Amy Goodman. Our website, democracynow.org. Thanks so much.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is more talk radio with our hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott.
Portland school board elections are May 19th. What are the candidates saying?
My name is Bobby Regan, and I'm excited to be running for the school board in Zone 3 because I believe in public education, and I believe that every child has the capacity to succeed at high levels. My highest priority is to get our graduation rate up.
Tune into KBOO April 27th through the 30th at 5:45 for special school board election coverage.
You can help KBOO end the spring membership drive early. Donate right now and be entered into the spring membership drive sweepstakes. One lucky KBOO supporter will win a prize package that includes a 6-month VIP pass to the Crystal Ballroom that allows you and a guest entry to every show, even if it's sold out, as well as access to the VIP viewing area. A 1-week artist residency at Southwestern Lodge in Seaview, Washington on the Long Beach Peninsula, $200 in gift certificates to the Portland Saturday Market, and 10 treatments at Working Class Acupuncture. For every $15,000 we raise between now and May 5th, we will remove one day from the spring membership drive, which will be from May 6th through May 16th. Thank you for your early support. All the funds raised during this time will be applied to the spring membership drive goal of $95,000. A donation is not required to enter the sweepstakes. For more info, kboo.fm/2015springsweeps.
Hi, this is Sun Lee, KBOO's membership director. I want to thank you for being a member and a listener to KBOO. I also wanted to share this listener's comment on why they support KBOO.
Melanie from Portland, Oregon says, thank you for your programming. The positive social, political work you guys cover is wonderful. I hear of it nowhere else. So much important and smart organized work going on, unnoticed to a large degree, in an otherwise sere and superficial media environment. Hope and strength shared. Props. I also very much like the literary and musical diversity. Therapy and a meal, right? Thank you. Thank you.
We hope that you feel the same. Please support your community and your local radio station by going to kboo.fm/give.
morning. Today,
good morning.
Today is, I was going to say Thursday, Monday, April 27th, 2015. This is KBOO Community Radio.
Yes, KBOO Portland. I wasn't even going to say anything. 90.7 in the metro area, 91.9 in Point South, and Yeah, 91.9 in Point East. In Point South is 104.3.
And it all depends. Oh, you mean from where we are?
Yeah, from where we are. Okay. And KBOO, you know, resolutely programs at this assigned frequency, so I have to get that right for all of the legal purposes. And if you are in the worldwide listening area, then you are at www.kboo.fm.
And this is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott.
My name is Celeste Carey. And we're pretty sure now that we know who we are.
Okay. So before we begin, I want to inform and share with people some sad news for those of us here at KBOO. This morning, we would like to honor the memory of former KBOO talk show host Melody Silverwolf. Melody died on Friday after suffering a stroke earlier this month. Melody was one of KBOO's original morning talk show hosts. She and Ani Haynes founded Positively Revolting Talk Radio 21 years ago. And she was a strong voice for women, witches, and the goddess tradition. Melody also served on the KBOO board of directors for many years. Mm-hmm. She was a dedicated community activist who was involved in the Buckman Neighborhood Association during the time she lived in that area, a longtime hemp and marijuana activist, and served on the board of Oregon Normal. For many years, she fought to put a measure on the Oregon ballot legalizing marijuana. At the time of her death, she was living and working in Spokane, Washington. So we honor and remember Melody this morning.
Yeah, we served on the board together, and I remember when a lot of us were trying to get together and develop a platform and a process for equity of women's voices on KBOO. Mm-hmm. And there weren't as many programs or programmers or just plain voices of women on the air as there are now. And that was one of the things we worked together to do.
Oh, excellent. And look, coincidentally, you know, just before this program, Democracy Now! Air was talking about the 100th anniversary of, I always going to pronounce it wrong, Women International League for Peace and Freedom.
There you Wilf. Go. Okay.
Okay. Is okay. It Wilf? Wilf? Wilf?
Women's International League. Wilf.
Wilf. Okay. Okay.
You know, it's funny. It's another kind of women-centered landmark. This weekend passed, the woman who posed for Norman Rockwell's Rosie.
Yes.
Passed. She was 92, I believe. 92 years old. And the picture...
And wasn't a riveter.
No, she was not. I was, as a matter of fact, I was getting ready to get to that. No, you're right on. Actually, I have a picture I downloaded. Come on, computer, stop that. Gadgets.
Everything's connected.
I'm delivered. Yeah. There. Okay, see there? Oh. That's her. Okay, I know the rest of you can't see that, and maybe I'll post it on our site. So she went to meet Norman Rockwell. She wanted to do something patriotic in her area, and she knew that he painted a lot of local people that lived in his community. And she was a thin build, redhead, short woman, petite. But when you look at the painting that Norman did, you're looking basically at an industrial goddess here. Strapping arms because she had a riveting gun. And you couldn't have toothpicks and operate one of those things. And just a very commanding physical presence. But he did keep her red hair and freckles.
Okay.
You know, but this was an opportunity for women to not only get into manufacturing, but do what they saw as a patriotic and national duty, and just demonstrate that it's really important that everybody gets a chance to be involved in the well-being of a community, regardless of the size of the community. Everybody should get a chance to be involved, because together we're stronger.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yes.
Well, we remember those who had an influence and impact on our lives, and including that woman. Do you have her name? Do you recall?
I can pull it up. I probably still have the article sitting here, because I was doing much work that day. I went to an AFSCME conference, convention. We did our state convention.
And speaking of which, one of the things one of the things we wanted to get into, and I think it was a very interesting article that Celeste found. It's entitled "Gadgets Don't Change the World, People Do." And I, for those of you on computers, I posted
connected. Yeah, we'll say that.
I posted it on our website, the link to the article. It's not that long, and do you want to read it?
Yeah, if you all can put up with my kind of hoarse voice here.
Well, we can
go back and forth. Okay, well, you start, I'll pull mine up.
Okay, great. And I'm doing the old-fashioned way with a hard copy, and Celeste is not on her laptop, she's on her telephone.
Yeah, I'm on my little note tab book phone thing. Okay, here.
And you realize this is all appropriate. So, Gadgets Don't Change the World, People Do by Jathan Sadowski. And this was posted in Al Jazeera America. We often talk about technology as if it were a thing that happens to us. Peruse the technology section of any media outlet, and you will find yourself reading about what technology is doing, giving us new capabilities, reshaping our social lives, disrupting stodgy conventions, overcoming barriers that restrain our innovation. The one thing technology is not doing, it would appear, is being political. For many who work in or write about the tech sector, technology and politics are separate and unequal forces. Even avowed techno-skeptics fall into this trap. In a recent essay in The Guardian, Cambridge University political scientist David Runciman maintains that, quote, "Only politics can rescue you from bad politics." But even so, he is forced to concede that, quote, "The most significant revolution of the 21st century so far is not political. Technology has the power to make politics seem obsolete," end quotation. If technology is, as he puts it, dynamic, flexible, and exciting, politics is terminally gridlocked. These definitions can easily lead to a blanket defense of technology. Like it or hate it, at least technology is doing something. In his 1997 article, "Technology, the Emergence of Hazardous Concept," the historian Leo Marx shows that this way of thinking about technology has a long history. He is concerned less with the effect of specific gadgets than with the origins and characteristics of the very idea of technology. He writes, "Contemporary discourse, private and public, is filled with hackneyed vignettes of technologically activated social change, pithy accounts of the direction technology is taking us or changing our lives." This way of thinking becomes dangerous when it leads us to treat technology like something that is distinct from the human sphere, but able of acting on it powerfully and for the better. The problem, he writes, comes when we use the word technology as the subject of active verbs. This grammar, perhaps best exemplified in the title of Wired magazine founder Kevin Kelly's book, "What Does Technology Want?", obscures the role human plays in inventing technology and shaping the uses to which it is put. Technology, becomes an autonomous force, while politics is dismissed as a messy byproduct of the larger forces.
Okay, wait a minute. My tech decided to reload my page and send me all the way to the bottom here. Okay, so to continue the article, come on, technology, what do you want? Okay, here we go. Consider one ubiquitous contemporary example. And please do not get fixated on this, folks, because we are not talking about this situation or this business entity exclusively. It's just mentioned as an example. And consider Uber. We often talk about it as a technological innovation that just happens to have some political implications. Maybe it puts some taxi drivers out of work or conflicts with existing regulations. When governments respond with measures that Uber opposes, the new laws are scorned as antiquated regulations at odds with technological progress. Uber is simply a new platform that expands transportation options, while the political issues are undesirable byproducts imposed by outsiders. When MSNBC runs an article called "The Complicated Politics of Uber," the politics in the title refers to the various reactions of politicians, not the politics implicit in the very structure of ride-sharing apps. There is a center quote, "Technologies are not in danger of being politicized because they are political from the start, however carefully these politics are obscured." Instead of asking what might the political implications be of this technology, we should ask how might this technology actually represent politics by technological means. Uber is a well-capitalized legal entity with business plan and a vision for its role in society. So it has intrinsic political implications well before it even gets debated by politicians. Uber dumps heaps of money into lobbying, strong-arms state and local governments into compliance, and threatens journalists who criticize the company by selling its vast bank of travel data to city governments. It has become a data intermediary that local politicians rely on. It has even hired one of Barack Obama's former top strategists, a clear sign that Uber executives understand that their project is political. Uber is an easy target because it is the quick rise to power, or its quick rise to power has made
consuming activities behind the concept of technology somewhat harder. But the same principle applies generally. Technologies are shaped from the beginning by human beings making political, value-laden choices about what gets funded and how programs are implemented. Technologies are not in danger of being politicized because they are political from the start, however carefully these politics are obscured. When we speak and write, our subject should be the people and politics behind technology, not the technology itself. But such investigation and analysis is woefully rare. As Eugenie Morozov laments in a recent essay for The Baffler, in fact, the very edifice of contemporary technology criticism rests on the critics' reluctance to acknowledge that every gadget or app is simply the end point of a much broader matrix of social, cultural, and economic relations. If we follow Morozov in his insistence that technology reflects its social context, it will be easier to see how the concept of technology has become an instrument for hiding politics. The structural connections between apparently isolated phenomena will become easier to detect. Look at it this way. The problem isn't that there's a thorny technological branch. The problem is that the political roots are infected with rot. Of course, we should trim the thorny branches, but we must not then put away the clippers and think our problems have been solved.
And so there you have it. Now, really briefly, because this is a subject we've touched on before. As a matter of fact, Eugenie Molozov has been a guest on our mm-hmm. program, and we have talked about the internet and its use as a technology and its effect on us. The question today is whether you believe technology runs gadgets, or rather gadgets run us, or we run gadgets. Does technology, do gadgets change the world, or is it us? Now, one of the things that was kind of confusing to me in the article, it seemed like the author was speaking, as they say colloquially, out of both sides of his mouth. On one hand, he states that because of the intrinsic nature of human beings and that everything is political, even if we say it isn't. Therefore, our gadgets and our technologies are political because they're designed by political animals, which would mean to me then that you cannot be apolitical. Yes. But then he says, but we have to remember it's the wizard behind the curtain. You know, so I think that's kind of a hard issue to debate in the terms he's outlined. But for the way you experience technology, you use technology, you use gadgets, or gadgets use you. Do you agree that it's actually just people who change the world and not technology?
I think when I read this article, one of the points that occurred to me was to think more carefully about how we speak of technology.
Yes,
because it takes on a human characteristic sometimes, as he talks about what, you know, how technology is used as a noun and verb,
mm-hmm.
But also in a way in which it is becomes apolitical. It's a force into itself with no political leanings one way or the other. And in fact, what I thought, you know, you suggested that he's trying to suggest two things, but the first point that you said that he suggests was the most powerful thing for me was that we cannot think of technology as apolitical, and that humans are a part of it and create it. I think since the beginning of this new century, there is this creation myth around technology that it is apolitical and that it can do anything, and it's therefore, for lack of a better term, morally neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a point he makes, and I think I agree, is that it is not morally neutral. And the example he used about Uber, I thought was insightful, by saying that how it is promoted is, you know, sometimes
adversarial and political.
Adversarial and political.
Uber political.
Uber political, right? And that, in fact, you know, there is a well thought of business plan and strategy behind it. And it just appeals to the generation and that of any age who thinks that we don't want to mess with politics. You know, just give us our app so we can get from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
And why are politicians
getting involved in it, right?
Which, in fact, is a strategy that Uber executives want people to think of and encourage.
Yes. So give us a call. The number is 503-231-8187. Do you think that gadgets and technology change the world, or do you think that it's just people? And do you think the gadgets and technology are apolitical, or that it's not.
It's
simple. And, you know, one of the things I want to do is I want to kind of broaden the idea of what technology is, because I'm thinking when I'm reading this article of money.
Okay.
Okay, money is a gadget, most definitely. And people argue as to whether it is political or not. But according to the Supreme Court, money is political because it is speech. And words that we use as speech, it's hard to not be politicized. I'm not saying that there aren't words that are apolitical, but they're very hard to find and our very system of understanding it, i.e. context, can be highly politicized.
Certainly. Someone wrote in who started off similarly with you, and this person writes, technology is much more than computers and the internet.
Yes.
Fracking is technology.
Yes.
Tar sand extraction is technology. Modern warfare is technology.
Well, old warfare was technology, truth be told. If you didn't have a sword.
Yeah. But one thing he said about modern warfare, and again, this came out this past weekend, I noticed in some of the way in which news reported the killing by drones of individuals who were held captives by those who are characterized as enemies of the United States. And so, you know, so often we think of drones as the safe way to create war. You know, you have these people sitting in a room someplace safe in the Americas, and they can carefully identify the enemy and very surgically kill the enemy and leave the woman and infant in the next room,
and the building,
and the and the people we are supposed to be saving, safe,
you know, and both uses of those safe on either side of that equation there are really relative, you know. Who's safe actually? Well, the people who are not the targets become this interesting phrase called collateral damage. And, you know, is it as safe as it's supposed to be? Or should we even be thinking of warfare as safe? But that's a whole different conversation. So, that's a different one. We don't want to get caught in that one today.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and we'll go to a caller. Good morning, Miriam.
Hi. Yeah. I think this is great that you're talking about this. And really started me thinking. But I wanted to point out that technology, we think of technology as being, you know, recent. But human beings have been doing technology ever since we've been on the planet.
Exactly.
One of our first technologies was capturing fire. And that has led us into our current crisis of global, because we're burning, guess what, fossil fuels. Wood.
Yes.
Well, I wouldn't call it a fossil fuel, but, you know, a carbon fuel. Wood, which led to deforestation and, you know, running out of wood, started burning coal, you know. So, and also the electric light bulb, which is more recent, of course, than fire, but that is, I think that's revolutionized our lives more than anything else, because it's turned night into day, which we just take for granted now.
Mm-hmm. And not just take for granted, we actually overuse it, because if you've seen shots of the planet taken by satellites, etc., it's a great waste of that energy when you pass over some metro areas, like cities in the state of Nevada.
Yeah, there's so much light pollution now that is being a real problem. In fact, I have a complaint about where I live. Here's my complaint about lights. Security lights are posted too low, and they often shine into the faces of pedestrians and actually blind people, or even drivers sometimes. Yeah. And they're less secure, not more secure.
Right.
When you're blinded, you can't see people.
That's true. You know, what that is poor use of lighting, because lighting for security dictates that you create an even glow all in an area, not a high high intensity spot of light because of night blindness. And the reason I know this is because this is part of what I do for a living. But, you know, that's a poor use of technology. But one of the things that I wanted to kind of spin out based on what you said, we're talking about whether technology and gadgets change the world or do people. Well, one effect of too much light is it's been interrupting our circadian rhythms. So that's a deep level of interruption of people by technology. You know that if your body can't go into its natural rhythm of sleep, action, rest, etc., then you're not functioning at your highest peak, and technology is basically kicking your butt.
Yeah, I have blackout curtains in my bedroom.
Yeah, smart
so
move.
I can sleep. Yeah.
Yes, right. Indeed. Well, thank you so much for your call and reminding us that technology has been with us as long as we've been here.
Yeah, right. Okay.
All right,
thank
you.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And remind us of the question, Celeste.
Well, the title of the article is, does technology and gadgets change the world or do people? And I kind of feel that I almost feel like this is a false dichotomy. I think that's what I'm getting to. I don't think you can always separate it. And then the author, Jathan Sadowski, also believes that technological creations has intrinsic political power, but it's not an autonomous force. In other words, it doesn't just act by itself. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we answer and discuss with our callers at 503-231-8187. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. So I'm a technologist, and you took...
Well, how do you define technologist, Michael?
PhD in computer science.
Okay, so I would call that a geek, but okay, I got you.
That's fine.
An uber geek.
Except I had never actually have bitten the head off a chicken. Which is the origin of that word.
Yes, indeed.
But I've bitten the heads off all kinds of software chickens. Anyways, I think you took two words right out of my mouth, which is false dichotomy, which is what I was going to start by saying. I think it's both. And one good way of thinking about it could be if you divide technology up into sort of a shallow layer and a deeper layer. And the deeper layer is like Shockley invents a transistor at Bell Labs. You know, I don't think there's a whole lot of political content in the fact that something like a transistor got invented. So that's the deep layer. The shallow layer would be more like, well, now we have this technology, what can we do with it? So applied technology. Uber didn't invent any of the underlying technology that enables them to do what they do, like the internet or smartphones or graphical user interfaces or anything like that. They didn't invent any of that. They were just some business guys that said, you know, now that this stuff is possible, what could we do with it? Well, one thing we could do with it is ride sharing. Now, that's something that's got much more of a, you know, societal effect and political impact than the deep level of technology does. I think the deep level has, it's not so much that it has a political impact or political intentions, but that world, there's things that are easier to figure out and things that are harder to figure out. So right now we have transistors and computers and smartphones, and we don't have brain transplants.
Right.
Yes. You know, if we were able to, we would probably want to do brain transplants, but no one has the first clue how to do that. And, you know, there are problems that are harder for science and technology to attack, and they tend to go where the lower-hanging fruit is. So there might be something like political content in that, but it's not because necessarily they have political intentions. It's just because, like, they work in the world of the possible instead of the impossible.
Well, you know, I feel it's a false dichotomy too, because, you know, it's the way he has laid it out, it sounds like both the chicken and the egg are simultaneously existing and interacting. So let me ask you something, since you're kind of talking in the same direction I was thinking. One of the things that I had considered talking about today is the fact that China recently admitted to genetic manipulation of human beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read about that.
And so, you know, the mere thought that you are going to manipulate the DNA, the genetic code of a human being, to me is a very political decision. And by politics, I mean you are doing it not just because you're curious, which is a personal politics, and you have the power and the means and whatever else at your disposal to do so, which is a personal politics, but somebody else is going to be the initial recipient of your technological experimentation or prowess or the end result, which is doing to another, an external and other, which then makes that a political transaction. You're not doing it to yourself. Now, I know I'm using a broader definition of politics, but I think when we want to speak of something as profound as what we create to better move and operate in this world, which is what I'll call technology, a force or implement that we create to better move in this world. And we say that politics is how we work with each other, personal transactions, interpersonal transactions. I think that really points out the fact that he's kind of setting up the false dichotomy. Am I making sense?
Yeah. I think the way I would say with the same thing that you're saying, you know, in my different words, is that you talk about altering the human genome, and that's something that's an applied technology that's going to have huge effects on all kinds of people in all kinds of ways. But if you go back, like, I don't know, to the 1980s or so, and talk about, let's develop this technology of gene sequencing, let's figure out what the sequences are in DNA, that's more of a deep technology that, well, you know, God only knows how many different kinds of ramifications that could have, but some of them are really good. Some of them are things everybody is happy that we have now, like the anti-blood clot drug that keeps a stroke from causing half of your body to get paralyzed. You know,
yes.
Everybody's happy about that, but that came from that same technology that these guys in China now are using on the human genome. Of course, the thing they did was on non-viable embryos, so the, quote, people, unquote, they were affecting weren't going to live very long and weren't necessarily going to be too far along in the process of becoming people.
Yes, exactly that. They just politically redefined them as not human.
Well, you know, this would be a horrible non sequitur, so let me just quickly fly over it. That's got relevance to the abortion issue, but we don't want to go down that road. Right?
Not now, not here, not in this fashion. It deserves more gravitas. Yeah. But thank you so much for your call, sure. Michael.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland. Numbers here are 503-231-8187, or you may email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com. And we just listened to Michael, a self-described
technologist,
and the two of you were talking about politics and stuff, and you know, one thing that I do remember from those many hard nights of studying Greek politics is meaning of or from the people. So all mm-hmm. things are
all things are political. And what was it? Who was it that said the personal is political?
Yes.
I can't remember who it was. I want to say Friedkin, but I'm not sure.
It's a feminist.
Right.
I think it came
out
of the women's movement.
Right.
Modern second.
I don't know why I thought Jane Friedkin, but I don't know. Hey, I'll look it up.
Okay. You can use your technology.
All righty. Well, we use our technology in the meantime to listen to our next caller. Good morning.
Good morning, George.
Cecil. How are you folks this morning?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank
you. Good.
I was thinking about a previous caller's remark that all through history, people have created technological things and used it. And I thought about our civilization, which is one of investment for profit, and that seems to have a powerful role.
Yes.
And then I began to wonder, is it possible, as the problems of investment for profit mount up, as the entire world is permeated by the enormous amount of capital to invest, does it, over the centuries, change our relation to technology? And one of the things that came to mind was, we hear a lot about the dumbing down of America, and certainly this isn't true everywhere else, but are there some things going on because capital is having problems, and it, does its way of using technology change, or does it just seem to change?
Well,
I'm
not even sure. I think I need two things. One is your definition of technology for this discussion, and change for this discussion, because to me, by its very nature, technology is like running water. You can't even really define it as change because it's an ongoing continuum. Does that make sense?
I think it may seem to be frozen in time to some people, but whether you're talking medicine or weapons or the tools of science, and, you know, chemistry and mathematics and metallurgy, these things are changing all the time. And I think if I look back, I wonder, it's not so much that the change seems to be radically different, although maybe it is, it's that I begin to wonder at the promises we were given back in the 1950s and earlier, too,
yes.
Back in the 1900s at the World Fair here, or in the 1850s at the famous World Fair in London.
Yes.
Things that would benefit people, and yet we look at our society and the safety net is raveling. Larger and larger numbers of people don't seem to be as benefited as we were promised. The wonders of medicine seem available to the very wealthy, but our medical system is one of the most poor performing among all of the industrialized nations. And I'm just wondering about the changes, and I can't put it together any better than that.
I think you're doing a very excellent job in describing this.
In which case, you know, that's one of the things that I think makes this article, the way it's set up, a false dichotomy. Our technology is changing us. So, you know, it changes us on such a profound and basic level. I don't think it's capable of grasping how much has changed us. Now, with regard to the expectations that you've mentioned, I don't think we had the capacity to really look at how deeply these changes we were proposing were going to either affect us, or that they were going to become so politicized. What were you about to say, Cecil?
Well, and this is part of a longer philosophical discussion, because I'm not sure to concede that technology is changing us. I think I would lean towards that we use technology, and as the caller was referring in your observation about so-called technological improvements, mm-hmm. and how and who it impacts, I think there's a philosophical, if not economic, interest and power dynamic that plays a role in all of this. And so it isn't so much that technology changes us, is who controls technology and how we use it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you because I'm still puzzling, but this helps, I think, sketch in some of the possible outlines of what may be happening. And thank you so much.
Thank you for your
for
your participation and sharing your thoughts with us this morning.
A wonderful program. Shirley, talk to you later. Bye now. Best wishes.
Good day.
Good luck. And you are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9 in points east along the Columbia River Gorge. In the Willamette River Valley, it is 104.3. And in the web, on the web, through the web, www.kboo.fm.
And before we go to our next callers, hold on. I want to remind our listeners that at 9, the Ohm Variety Hour looks at the psychological factors that distort thinking about wealth, poverty, and economic inequality. Also, a conversation with Michael Armstrong, Portland's lead sustainability planner in the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, regarding the recently released draft of the Portland Multnomah County 2015 Climate Action Plan. Also, a commentary on slavery and capitalism, and a discussion about May Day history and May Day 2015. Thank to all of you who are KBOO members for your continuous support. I want to invite those of you who are not members that you can become one today by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. We're speaking with about technology, and we're going to use, 19th century technology by answering the phone. 19th century, right? Telephone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And an analog phone.
Well, but it's not a rotary analog phone. So.
Okay. Francis, good morning.
It can also send text messages all over the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an improvement in technology. And I agree that it's how people use it and what they do with it. In advances in research and medicine and science, the DNA testing has allowed us to release many people from prison who were on death row.
Mm-hmm,
and,
that's true.
That's political. Also, technology in improvements in communication and with these cell phones has allowed us to see the brutal murder of Freddie Gray in Baltimore, Maryland. And kind of ironic technology. I'm allowed to see the swearing in of the new Attorney General, Loretta Lynch. Her speech was taking place just as Freddie Gray's funeral was beginning.
Very interesting.
Technology has allowed us to communicate about this in ways that we never were able to before. And Facebook and Twitter is alive with discussions about how Freddie Brown was brutally murdered.
Freddie Gray.
And I can't talk about it anymore. It's breaking my heart.
Certainly.
Talk to you later.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Francis. Certainly in terms of political activism, not only here in the United States, but throughout the world, modern forms of communication have played a role, but also has received pushback by those in authority. It has also played a role. The heightened surveillance on civilians is as a result of technology. Let's go to our next caller. Pierre, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. I think we should keep in mind that technology depends on what kind of energy we have to run it.
Yes.
And I think that's a key to a lot of our progress. We've been, had a lot of cheap energy, and the cheap energy is kind of going away. So, a great example would be if, the airlines are in trouble because fuel is expensive.
Yes.
And so if you don't have... if you don't have cheap fuel, we won't be flying much anymore because even, say, solar power, electricity is not going to fly an airplane.
Hmm.
So, and then I wonder if people remember, I don't know, this is back in the 70s, there was this movement for appropriate technology.
Well, the trick is how you describe appropriate. Okay. Who gets to describe it?
Uh-huh. Yes. Appropriate to what kind of sources you had, what your energy sources were.
Exactly.
And,
Then we'd be steampunk still, wouldn't we?
Well, it depends what you used to run the steam. You know,
that's true. You know, coal.
There's a political thing here. You know, I just got finished reading an article in the London Telegraph about how the U.S. is going to really take over the whole world natural gas field. You know, we're going to kind of run things. And it just seems to me like a pipe dream. You know, it depends. The gas, most of our natural gas comes from fracking, which is expensive and has environmental problems. And we're trying to beat out Russia and China. But the thing is that Russia and China have pipelines that they can run all around Asia and in Europe and everywhere. But we have to depend on, you know, these special, you know, we have to freeze it. You have to freeze it, turn it to liquefied natural gas, you know, and then put it on boats. And so I think we're setting ourselves up for a, they call it a stranded asset.
Stranded asset.
Well,
okay.
That means if you build a big refinery and all of a sudden you don't have the oil to,
right, to run it.
Yes. There it is, just sitting there, we're useless. You know?
That, but see, you know, I was laughing at, you know, the fact that the name is an oxymoron, you know, it's a stranded asset. Well, then it's not an asset, it's a liability.
Well, you could look at it that way too, yeah.
Because you still got to feed it, and it's not growing. It's not doing anything to help mom and dad, you know, run the family. But thanks. That's some great points there, Pear.
Okay, thank you.
All righty.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio Technology. Friend, foe, or?
Neither.
Neither.
Friend, foe, or neutral?
Neutral. Neutral.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Mike.
Oh, morning. Thanks. Personally, I think it's both, but can I suggest some good reading material and information that's well-established, that is accessible to anyone and everyone?
Sure.
Very much so. Thank you.
Yeah, it's kind of source material for a lot of studies, it seems like. The author, scientist, is Jared Diamond. And his book, Guns, Germs, and Steel.
That's why that name is familiar. Okay, there's a movie, too.
There's a great DVD, video, and online, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I've gotten it at the library before, although it's popular. And then also his follow-up book, Collapse, which kind of brings it full circle.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's my contribution. Have a good day.
Hey,
thank you so much.
And again, the author,
Gerald Diamond.
Diamond.
Yes, Guns, Steel, Guns, Germs, and Steel. You know, somebody told me about this book many, many, many years ago. Well, okay, maybe not that many. But the fact is that if you think about some of the early plagues that were spread intentionally, that right there is technology. And again, I say that's technology changing us. It's a gadget and a technology. Now, you know, the title says change the world, but I think when they say change the world, hopefully they're not just talking about geography and structures, manufactured structures, as people call them now, cities, but they're also talking about us and the animals also that populate the environment. And so I'm thinking that anytime you have a mass die out, you know, that's technology making a terminal change.
Yes, indeed. Well, let's go to our next caller. And
good morning, Harry.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. My first comment is, I think it was Aristotle said that a man is a political animal.
Yes.
So I think it's politics that's really running this, because why do people get in politics? Power, which leads to wealth. And, well, that's my comment on that. And as for gadgets, one of the main gadgets that's helped me in the last 2 years, I'm sight impaired, or in layman's term, blind as a bat. I use an eye device. It has a voiceover, and it allows me to get on the internet, check my email and everything, even though I'm blind.
Amazing.
Yes, indeed, that is. I find that technology really helpful because I'm dyslexic, so my brain has to work overtime to read. Sometimes I just let stuff read to me.
And While we have you, in terms of this gadget that you use, is it, how available is it for people?
It's very available. It's an app. It's an iDevice, an iPhone or iPod Touch.
Okay.
The Oregon Commission for the Blind has classes on it on how to use this type of technology.
Okay, excellent. Good information. Thank you
yes,
so much.
Thank you so much.
One last thing is about the ride-sharing app, Uber.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. One reason why it's being all over the country is this ride-sharing app is worth $10 billion a year.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
easily.
So there's a lot of money into it.
Yes.
And also, it's kind of ironic that one of the supporters of KBOO Radio is Radio Cab, and which is a good thing. But the idea of radio, most of my grandkids will probably say, "What's a radio?" And not only that, starting in 2015, the car manufacturers will not put radios in cars. You have to have a Bluetooth phone or something like that to get your radio broadcast through your speakers.
Yes.
That's a political move there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. And what was that? Dad, you just pulled up something real quick before we go to our next caller.
You wanted to see what that is. Hold on. Let me flip it back. It's talking about babies using smartphones before they can walk or talk. Here we go. There's the picture right there.
1 in 3 of babies are learning how to use smartphones before they can walk or talk. Is in Business Insider published today.
Well, the interesting thing is when you find various species of monkeys that do selfies and are conscious of what they're doing.
Yes.
So, I mean, technology is, I think sometimes when people try to make it be apolitical, they're ignoring the fact that there is a very piece of sound, basic, even folksy logic to the Supreme Court decision that speech is political, not necessarily money being speech, but that it's an expression of human communication.
Yes.
You know, and so when you recognize it as a force of human connectedness, then it's hard to see anything we do as apolitical. In other words, not political. But I want to say that the person who has been given credit to the phrase "the personal is political" is Carol Hanisch.
And let's go to, I think we have time for maybe one more caller, at least one more caller. LJ, you may be our last caller, so be
great.
Very wise.
Okay, short, sweet, and to the point. I am a Luddite. I have a rotary phone. I am talking.
That does not make you a Luddite, LJ.
I'm sorry?
I said that does not make you a Luddite. A Luddite is when you step outside your door and you just start yelling at us. So, and hope we can hear it.
All right. Anyway, I have a rotary phone. I don't have a computer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to use one. I am listening to you guys on the same portable radio that I bought at Radio Shack in the 70s.
Radio who?
Because Shack?
Yeah. Love Shack?
Because it plays cassettes. And
cassettes.
I do have a track phone. That my wife insists that I carry,
yes.
because you can't find a payphone on the street anymore these days. All right, so just a real couple of quick points. There's the privacy issue. Thanks to Edward Snowden, we find that the NSA is reading your emails. Every time you guys talk on a cellular phone, it's like talking on a megaphone. When I see
and we have kids, 30 seconds, LJ, I'm
okay.
Sorry.
When I see kids on the bus with their little gizmos, I guess they're texting each other instead of talking to each other. It's dehumanizing. And anyway, ba-dum-dum. Have a great day. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. And, you know, all of us are Luddites to our grandchildren. And
yes,
all of us are advanced to our grandparents.
That's right. But whatever way you express your political uses of technology, make sure you secure your right to free speech and information. How can you do that? By supporting your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 East, and 104.3 South.
And KBOO.FM.
Worldwide.
KBOO Monday, April 27th through Friday, May 2nd from noon to 4, and Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd from noon to 5 p.m. to hear our live broadcast from the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, brought to you by our friends and colleagues at WWOZ in New Orleans. We'll have access to five stages of fantastic traditional and contemporary New Orleans jazz and blues.